Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, here with you every Tuesday right around lunchtime or on the voiceofvashon.org/realtalk. You're listening to the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHOP, Vashon Island, Washington, your island connection. Real Talk is the show that seeks answers to questions, large and small, and today's question is both. I am delighted to have with me Tag Gornell, who is a retired huge animal veterinarian, and he's going to tell us about whales and plankton and how they might solve our climate crisis. Welcome, Tag.
Hello there. Nice to be here.
This topic is kind of new and surprising and hopeful in many ways. What I have recently read and what brought me to talk to you are kind of two different things. I got an article that I believe you saw as well about yes. How whales and phytoplankton can sequester more carbon than trees by multiple times. And that sequestering that carbon, of course, can help us reduce the impacts of global warming. And you, Tag Gornell, and Vashon Island Green Tech have recently received a grant to educate us about the value of phytoplankton.
Exactly.
So how will you spend that money that you got in the grant, and what can you tell us about the saving properties of plankton?
Well, at this point, we'll talk about a couple different things. Perhaps what plankton and whales and other marine life do, as well as what humans do to retard that process.
Uh-huh.
And the grant that we got for Island Green Tech is to develop a language to explain to the public so that they will listen. As scientists, we have a tendency to be fairly dry in the kind of things that we say, and not a lot of people nod off during scientific presentations. And we want to invigorate the conversation. Obviously, plankton, unless you look through a microscope, are not very vibrant in their presentation. It's the large megafauna, large animals that bounce around in the environment that people want to look at. They want to look at giraffes and elephants and whales. And people go out on sightseeing boats to see whales, but you don't get many sightseeing boats looking at plankton.
Yeah. So how are whales and plankton connected?
Well, certainly, let's just maybe go to the small one first. The phytoplankton are the plant plankton in the ocean, and the plant plankton are the oxygen producers and carbon sequester animals. And they produce probably 75-70% of the world's oxygen. These are the little plants in the ocean.
Wow.
That the next type of plankton, the zooplankton, feed on. The animal plankton are the zooplankton. So it's very important to have grass for cattle. It's very important to have phytoplankton for other animals, the animals of the sea. And so the phytoplankton are what we, there's a phytoplankton study that's been going on Vashon for decades.
Really?
Many decades. And very few people know about it.
Really?
Carlista Rickerson and Mary Kelly assess the levels of phytoplankton in Quartermaster Harbor, looking for levels of different types of plankton. Some of the toxic planktons, the paralytic shellfish poisoning and red tide kind of things, they are looking through their microscopes to assess that. And just this last week, we had sound toxins over in Seattle where volunteers from all over Puget Sound came together and had a conversation, about 30 people, about what's going on out there and how to address this.
This is kind of a secret society thing.
It is. Well, it's below the waterline, and people don't think much above the waterline.
So we can't see plankton or phytoplankton with the naked eye? Can we? Certainly can. Oh, we can.
Certainly can. You just get a little scoop of water, a little scoop of ocean water in the right spot, and you will see it. You will see tiny octopus, tiny clams, tiny crab. They're all in there.
And those are phytoplankton?
Those are zooplankton and phytoplankton.
So the zooplankton eat the phytoplankton.
That's right.
And how?
And other things, yes.
How do they?
And then the smaller fish eat the zooplankton, and the medium fish eat the smaller fish, and on up the scale to the whale.
Okay. So how, if the fish are eating the plankton,
mm-hmm.
how does it sequester carbon?
Dying.
The fish
there are many, dying? Many of these things, many of the phytoplankton elements are sequestering, and then they die and drop to the bottom, just like trees drop in the forest, just like the permafrost is old green material that is now gone down and frozen.
So when they are at the surface, they're collecting CO2.
They're collecting CO2, and there's CO2 in the water, too. That's where your ocean acidification is coming from, the CO2 being absorbed by the water. As the water warms, and we'll start to see pull in more CO2.
So if the phytoplankton are plentiful enough, they will pull the CO2 from the air and drop to the bottom of the ocean?
Well, and in the process of doing so, just like a tree does, makes oxygen.
Ah.
Just like your grass does, it makes oxygen.
So how would you compare this idea that the population of whales increases?
Interesting. You jumped right to whales.
It is.
Why?
Because I can relate to whales.
Because
more than
you can see them.
I can see them.
It's superficial.
Yeah.
It is. It's big and it's attractive. And we have a tendency to do that. We ignore the important stuff and go right to the flesh.
Okay, so tell us how the plankton is important to our climate situation.
I'll tell you some things, but the grant that we've got is to address how to talk to people, how to present these things in a way that people will remember it and pay attention to it. Everything we do to the ground on this island, anything that we spray on the ground, anything that we put in the sink and flush down the toilet is into the ground. And that eventually gets into Puget Sound.
That's a scary thought.
It is. You know, we have fish that are attracted to certain water outfalls because of the drugs that are coming out of some of those water outfalls.
Oy.
We've got stoner fish. You know, we've got fish looking for a high. We've got fish that are on getting exposed to things like antibiotics and birth control pills and antidepressants and these kinds of things out in Puget Sound that have changed their behavior.
Think
what it does to people.
Yeah. What I'm thinking of now is what it's doing to those poor unsuspecting fish who didn't make that choice.
That's
and
right.
How their change in behavior affects the ecosystem overall.
Exactly.
What can you tell us about
that? Exactly. Well, if you're running into a certain medication down there that lowers your awareness, you don't care if you get eaten or not.
So,
and if you're exposed to certain things down there that reduce your ability to reproduce, you're not going to get things on your plate. You're not going to get certain creatures that you like to eat, clams, crab, and shrimp, and those kinds of things, because they're not breeding.
Because they're stoned.
No, because they're on birth control.
Ah.
not specifically a birth control, but some medications mm-hmm. that will affect them as well.
What, if anything...
Are you getting depressed yet?
I am.
You are.
What, if anything, can be done about that? Here, I thought we were going to talk about plankton, and we're talking about...
Prozac.
Right.
Some of those things.
Fish on Prozac. What can be done about that? And how are people how are scientists looking at the potential for mitigating that kind of impact?
Well, scientists have been aware. You know, we've lost, they're estimating probably 40% of the phytoplankton since the 1950s.
That's true.
And some estimates of losing it 1% a year. So there are things that we're, and plankton just doesn't exist in salt water. There are freshwater plankton, too. People call limnologists that look at freshwater situations. They're freshwater oceanographers for the most part.
So if we were able to find a way to replenish the amount of phytoplankton in our waters, whether they be salt or not, would it be possible that that could reverse the climate crisis?
It certainly would have a huge effect on it. Not necessarily reverse it, because what we've been doing all along here is measuring what's going down. We're not seeing too much stuff come up.
Yeah, right.
And the only things that can make phytoplankton are other phytoplankton. It's like people. It's a bird and a bee kind of thing.
Okay, but where do the whales come in?
The whales are the end of the line. When you're going up the chain and you're starting at the phytoplankton, the zooplankton, eating them, and the small animals that go up the chain, I'll give you a chart later, which is a tough thing on radio.
It's radio.
It's yeah. radio, I know. I used to tell people I did radio for lip readers. Whales are the top predators. We are a top predator.
Yeah.
The orca is the top predator. It eats other whales in some instances, and seals and walrus. Mm-hmm. So the top predators, it seems to be something that we are attracted to. We're attracted to the lions and what have you. That's where they come in. They do come in. You were referencing an article that Steve Bergman here on the island sent out that was talking about the conveyor. And the pump.
Yes, the whale
conveyor. And what the whales are doing.
Yes.
And this is just another relationship that the environment has in its beings that are out there. One of the largest whale conveyors it goes up and down the coast of Washington. The California gray whale, which feeds in the high nutrient area of Alaskan waters in the Ohotsk Sea, and then every year travels down to Baja California, which is pretty nutrient poor, to have its calves and its young. And they lose a tremendous amount of weight in that 17,000-mile migration. That fat layer that they had going south is much reduced going north, because they don't feed on that entire migration.
Wow. So when they are losing weight, does that somehow slough off into the waters and
the weight?
Yeah, well,
they're using it. It's a bad. Their fat layers, which is their blubber. They don't have fat within their muscles. That's their storage. So as they travel, they use that fat. You can travel behind a California gray whale going north and smell its breath, which is much different than the southern migration. There's a lot of acetone that comes off.
Is that like ketosis?
Yeah, ketones. The ketones are coming off. Yeah.
I know when people are on the
keto diet,
their breath kind of stinks.
That's right. But it's the ketones.
It's ketosis. So yeah. How does that, when they're migrating then, is it their waste material?
They're putting off a lot of waste material, but they do, as they metabolize, they still have that material. They're urinating, they're defecating, they're going through the normal bodily functions. And we do too. We put an awful lot of waste material off. You know, we're picking up stuff from our pets in the yards all the time.
Yeah.
That stuff happens. And it happens in to the benefit of other creatures in the environment. So that's a relationship. There are other things, strangely enough, fish do the same thing. Pretty much everything that takes something in as a nutrient puts something out as waste product. So it's that churning in the ocean, the tides, the sun pulling things up and down, the currents, the rivers going into the oceans. There's an awful lot of nutrient churning. And there's upwellings in various parts of the world that are just glorious as far as their life that it brings up. And you'll find a lot of other animals in those upwelling areas off the coast of Chile.
Well, and you said that one of the largest whale conveyors is that water between Baja and Alaska. That's us.
I mean, across our coast?
Yes, right, across our coast.
It's going down the Washington coast, yeah.
So does that mean that
At Christmas, they're in Mexico.
I'd like to be in Mexico at Christmas. So does that mean that that is a nutrient-dense area along the Washington coast? Does that mean that we have more phytoplankton growing there than in other areas?
Any place there are nutrients, you're likely to find that depending on what other things are involved in the nutrients.
And like?
The nasty stuff, the pesticides,
oh.
The herbicides, your weed killers.
So if we are to look at
I've got to jump back to that a minute.
Okay.
Weed killers. You're killing a plant. Phytoplankton is a plant.
That's kind of a no-brainer.
Put the dots together.
Yeah, right. So if we're talking about the carbon sequestration capacity
mm-hmm.
of phytoplankton and how increasing that will help us to mitigate our climate crisis, where do we start? You're talking about the things that we are putting into the water. Is that where we start?
That's right. Do what you can do. What the rest of it is out of your hands, literally.
So what we can do, for starters, is to stop using weed killers. But when we're talking about what we eliminate from our own bodies,
mm-hmm.
does that mean don't take birth control, don't take antidepressants?
Be mindful of those things. Yes, if you need those, take those. But we've got to be paying more attention as to where that kind of stuff goes. We don't test for a lot. We don't test for that kind of stuff much at all. In fact, while we're talking here, I'll dig out an email I just forwarded to somebody. We don't test for hardly anything in our sewer output. It goes into our sewer plant. We do some settling. We do some processing there. Then it gets taken off over to Renton and going through another process. But we don't look for the antibiotics. We don't look for those kinds of things that are in there. The Northern European people, our countries, researchers are looking for this a lot more than we are. If it hurts when you do that, don't do that.
So,
you know, if you're causing a problem when you do that, you know, we're doing things to our yards and our lawns and our gardens that are affecting the worms in your lawns and gardens who make the dirt and affecting other animals. You may not be damaging the worm itself, but the little bugs inside the worm that actually make your dirt, you're killing them.
So organic gardening makes sense.
We've got a number of people on the island that are talking about, have been talking about this for an awfully long time. You know, Diane Emerson and Michael Laurie do just a fine job of trying to make the public aware. There are ways of doing these things. Roundup is not good. I'm sorry, glyphosate is not good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And
at least one of the stores on the island has banned Roundup from their inventory.
A toxicologist friend of mine told me many decades ago that 90% of the pregnant women in the Great Lakes Midwest have have glyphosate in their systems.
Eek. And glyphosate is a byproduct. Glyphosate. Or the
glyphosate is the ingredient
in Roundup. That is
And one of the concerns you have to have about this is that companies that manufacture those kinds of things will come after you.
Well, and that's the whole economic side.
That's right.
Of the phytoplankton question, and how to make clear to large corporations that are manufacturing the things that are or that are supporting whale harvesting, how to clarify the true economic value of phytoplankton and whales and all those things.
That's talking to humans. That's couching it in a way that they will understand it and accept it.
Yeah.
You know, we have vast farmlands in the Midwest. The breadbasket of this country. And then we have all those areas that drain into the Mississippi River and the large dead zone that's in the Gulf of Mexico. We're doing these things to ourselves. So, again, if it hurts, don't do that. But you've got to realize that it hurts.
That it hurts. And I think we have to find ways to replace what we consider as benefits of these harmful things.
Well, we have to understand them.
Yeah.
People have to understand them. You're not going to replace. You can make the environment appropriate that it improves. But you have a hard time replacing. We do plant trees. The plant sale that went on this weekend at the Land Trust. Plant trees. Plant plants. Plant native plants, for the most part, or plants that are suitable to the environment that you're in.
Well, and if we're going back to the idea of whales and plankton, how can individuals impact that in a positive way so that the carbon sequestering capacity of phytoplankton increases?
Well,
how do I make that better?
You would do far better by not spraying certain things on your property.
So it goes that far back.
Exactly. That's where it starts.
Yeah.
That's where it starts. You know, we've, in large part, society has done a great benefit to whales by not eating them, not harvesting them for their oil, which is what we used. Before, you know, I think it was Dr. Drake found pumped oil in Pennsylvania.
Well, but in the meantime, we've reduced the whale population by 75%.
Sure, because they're running out of stuff to eat.
Ah. So,
You didn't make that connection.
Now I'm getting it. Well,
yes, it is that. It is as simple as that. If you are disrupting the process and the food is not there, and we think, oh, we're seeing certain whales come back into certain areas, so that things must be improving. No, they're looking for something to eat because wherever they were before, there's nothing to eat.
They're migrating to places.
We have orca in this Puget Sound area. You know, I picked up one in the 70s off the beach that was a peanut head, one of these skinny, starving animals. Mm. In that case, it was because it had an infected tooth, and I pulled the tooth out. Kept it fattened up because we could provide it food. With that infected tooth, it couldn't find its food because the sonar was shot.
The tooth affected its sonar?
Well, the receiving area of the sonar is the lower jaw. Oh. And if you have an infection in your lower jaw,
it doesn't work.
Your receiver on your radio, can you hear me out there? The receiver on your radio was not working. The broadcast was fine. But there was nobody listening. So, in the orca situation now, we have got a lot of organophosphates. We've got certain pesticides, herbicides, that are lipophilic. In other words, they love fat. And they get into the fat of fish. And What is the popular fish for the orca in Puget Sound?
The salmon.
Which one?
Coho?
It's the fattest fish.
Oh.
And within the fat of those fish are these elements that then go into the whale, which then, when the mother nurses its calf, goes into the calf because it's in the milk fat.
And what exactly does that do for those listeners who need to make that connection?
What is your brain made of?
Fat.
There you go.
Oh.
We're all fatheads.
So when the fat of the whale, whether it's the mother, the nursing mother, or the calf, is contaminated, if you will, they don't function like they should. The brain does not function.
That's right. And if a beluga whale dies in the St. Lawrence Seaway, in those waters, it has to be treated as a toxic waste because its fat has accumulated so much.
So rather than letting it die naturally and provide its waste nutrients to the ocean, are we pulling them out?
They have to be treated as toxic waste.
What does that mean? What do they do with them then?
Well, they render them, they put them someplace else, which is another problem. We scrape soils, things die. We had Eagle Harbor that was highly contaminated. We had a Sarco that was a highly contaminated area. In fact, I remember picking up a dead California gray whale. It wasn't, probably had nothing to do with Eagle Harbor, but it just happened to be there. It was sort of a karma thing. And we also picked one up near the Sarco docks many, many years ago. Not that those areas had anything to do with it, but again, it was strange that the whale should show up here. And the one down at Sarco, we had to pull out of the water, and we took it to a landfill in Tacoma that is now a housing development.
Oh, boy.
We hide these things.
You know, and there are, it sounds like, for lack of a better term, cover-ups. It sounds like we have been putting Band-Aids on our environmental problems.
Cover-ups.
Making them only worse.
I think willful ignorance, not necessarily cover-ups. You have no alternative, perhaps.
It's sort of like treating the symptom without actually treating the cause.
That's right.
Tag Gornall, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on Real Talk to talk about plankton and whales and how we can help to grow more plankton out there and hopefully sequester some carbon from the air.
Well, Susan, I hope I haven't depressed you and your audience.
Nothing like reality pills. And we do broadcast live at lunchtime, so
there you go.
There are your reality pills, dear listeners. Thank you for listening to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. If you have an idea or a question you'd like an expert to answer, you can send it to me at realtalk@voiceofashon.org.